J10, number 4B.
Go on and see then that how practical it is on the mental level. And we remember that we're just exercising out from the mental level. We always want to be aware that this is not the highest practice, certainly, that we see in Christian Science, and that we know that. We know that our method of working is in divine metaphysics, certainly in working with the ideas of the synonymous terms onward. But again, to appreciate not skipping over the mental and the mental that can be good and evil, which I think students may do. They may say, okay, that's fine. All is mental. The mental is good and evil. Now let's get on with the work. When this is really where the root cause of all sickness comes from, is from the mental. And Mrs. Eddy didn't jump over it. She took it very seriously in her medicine chapter, because she keeps over again and over again and over again telling us that it's all reduced down to beliefs. The beliefs that mortal mind holds causes the physical effect, causes what we call sin, disease, and death. So again and again, she just keeps wanting to reiterate that it's mentality and the structure of mentality that's causing the difficulties, what constitutes mentality. And that we can only get out of that realm of mortal consciousness, which is filled with these individual, collective, and universal beliefs operating on the unconscious, subconscious, collective unconscious, universal unconscious levels through, of course, science. But we take this level seriously, and insofar as we see why it is the fundamental so-called belief or problem of which we are suffering from. And I think we see it. We see how strong that these universal and collective beliefs are, and that they do surface in our life, and they can cause us physical discomfort, and we, though ourselves are a healthy individual. And that's annoying, and it can only be only healed through the healing of consciousness. Mrs. Eddy says on page, in Science and Health, on page 408-31, that a mortal mind is ignorant of itself, ignorant of the errors it includes, and of their effects. So she then went on to really struggle then in her own life. She always wanted us to know that through her own life experience, she arrived at these conclusions, because as we've seen then, that her struggle with physical illness, really where she was ill, and we know she had to spend a lot of time in bed, though the diagnosis wasn't such that there was anything really physically wrong with her, as much as she eventually could see she was suffering from the dominant beliefs of her father in old theology, of which she was rebelling against, and finally would rebel totally against with her book and textbook, Science and Health. Now, these mythological beliefs then that constitute the unconscious, these beliefs, these universal, collective, and individual beliefs, really then are such that they came from various myths, and these myths always came up from some type of an event. During that mythological age is when we took a look at that age that man came out of a cave mentality into a magical mentality, into a mythical mentality, finally into a total mental nature of his work through thinking and reasoning and logic, that those myths were caused by all sorts of different things that happen, they would cause a myth. For example, a physical event such as an earthquake would cause a myth that they would feel, well, that there was some god behind an earthquake, or there was a god behind the thunderstorm, or a god of the sun, a god of the moon, and that soon the physical event was forgotten, but the myth stayed. You see, that local earthquake that may have caused one to have a god of the earth quaking, or a god of thunderstorms, or a god of the sun. It's those myths that linger, not the physical event in our universal and collective unconscious mind. Myths came up through physiological events such as food and eating and all the different myths that are around food, and through sexuality, the fertility goddesses and these various points that have come up along the line, through psychological events, through dangerous situation, through mental illness caused myths, everyday facts of the husband, wife, father, mother, child. We know that this went on to be the basis, really, of the celestial family of God, the anthropomorphized father, and then the mother Mary, and the child Jesus. All that celestial family that is in heaven, that governs and controls the universe in a personal myth. It was, as we see, then it was just everyday facts that were generalized into the myths that form the basis of world religions today. It taking a lot just to break down the anthropomorphic concept that seems to be behind world religions. Then Max went on in his book on an introduction to Christian Science, and showed us then that this whole mortal consciousness is not personal. He said mortal consciousness comes from then the impersonal mortal mind and not from a person. That mortals did not wish for nor create mortal consciousness. The reverse is true. Impersonal mortal mind creates mortals. And today we all have already more or less glorified together that understanding in retrospection and introspection on page 67, line 1, where Mrs. Eddy said that sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed. Hence, one's concept of error is not the whole of error. The human thought does not constitute sin, but vice versa. Sin constitutes the human or physical concept. Therefore, in general, Max says, we are inclined to believe that it's a sinner who sins and that mortals commit sin and must therefore be punished. But the exact opposite is the case. For, as Mrs. Eddy says, the sinner created neither himself nor sin, but sin created the sinner. The sinner is merely the tool, really, of impersonal mortal mind. And with an understanding of that gives a great compassion towards mankind and the desire to heal all mankind. Even the most hardened criminal is open to the love that we really give out in our consciousness, to see that even those who may be on death's row, so to speak, are being sinned by mortal mind, in impersonal mortal mind. That we can't call them evil, that evil thinks them, so to speak. That the whole universal belief that goes against the universe and the earth, even before man was here, was that the belief of spiritualism, that it's just a belief that the principle of being can be reversed. That 2 + 2 can be turned into 5. It's just there as a belief, and if one buys in to that belief of reversal, then it gets caught up into that virtual realm, of hypnotism, and we're all caught up into that hypnotic suggestion. The movie, so to speak, of life in and of matter here and now, called the second record of creation, which, as we know now through the interpretation of the second record of creation, has just been reduced down to hypnotism, a hypnotic suggestion of Adam, the first god of mythology, that a mist went up, and that ye shall be as gods, and rule over the earth. And therefore, these gods of mythology and all this bought into that reversal belief, and therefore all the various myths come to us from that standpoint of belief. And those we're born into. We are born into that universal and collective unconscious, and it thinks us until controlled by science. Some of us are fortunate that those myths have been handled through various generations of our families. Some families haven't handled the myths as well as others. Hence, we have those who seem to create so many difficulties in the world that we call evil, through the drug culture, through organized crime, that they just were not exposed to, along the line, to a family, a situation, being able to control myths through their religion or through their environment and through family, really be able to know what is right from wrong, still on the mental level, huh? But at least the myths have been helped quite a bit by families getting educated, families going to school, coming out of those old wives' tales of that they brought from what they used to call the old countries, that they brought to America. These tales that finally the next generation of the children of those great pioneers that came, for example, to America with their myths, that the new generation through their education would say to their parents, this isn't true, this is a myth. It's not so. Science shows it isn't so. And we know how many of those tales, especially in therapy, that the remedies that they had, putting this plant and that plant on you with this flannel and that flannel to do these sorts of things, all these things had to be broken down, and that was been only within, 100 years or so that we've been able to help with so many of them. So slowly but surely we see then that point five, immortal consciousness, the greater controls the lesser, that the majority beliefs govern the minority beliefs, or the stronger belief governs the weaker. And therefore, that's why we can see then that those universal beliefs of death control the collective individual. We die because of that universal belief. And we all know that that needn't be. And that the stronger belief controls the weaker. That's, as we know, that whole sense of faith healing. When faith in the medicine and the doctor is greater than our own fear of the disease or the belief, and we know if the doctor says when we go into him or her that, it's such and such a situation for you, but don't worry, it'll take just a few days, I have this remedy, and in a few days you're going to be okay, just fine, back to normal. One thinks nothing about it, one goes out happily, takes a remedy from that level, and they're fine. But if the doctor got your medical records switched up with somebody who was really very, very ill and said to you, oh my, this is very, very serious, we're not sure if you're going to make it, I'll give you a remedy, you may make it, you may not make it, come see me in a few weeks. The patient can go home and be very ill and sick, and who knows, die of the disease that the doctor had on the wrong medical records. Mrs. Eddy told us, didn't she, of the person in the bed who they told the patient was there with cholera, and that person died of cholera, and later it was found out that nobody was in the bed with cholera. So we are all very much aware how it's just a hypnotic suggestion, and how strong hypnotism is, and that we're all under that hypnotic suggestion, but step by step we're coming out and of that belief. But it's just these the stronger belief in truth is stronger than belief in a doctor we know. But as Mrs. Eddy said, belief has to become faith and finally spiritual understanding. Just to believe in truth isn't enough. We had to have the wisdom and purity and spiritual understanding that would give us finally the spiritual power to lay down our mortal concepts and experience health and holiness. So we know belief doesn't help us anymore. It's only what we're gaining through our step-by-step debunking of mortal consciousness. Then Max Kapler, in his book, An Introduction to the Science of a Christian Science, as we're finding it on page 83 to 96 in his book, at a point 6 says, well, anyhow, mortal consciousness filled with these universal collective and individual beliefs, they're a counterfeit of the divine mind, as we've seen now. They're just the belief of reversal. And therefore, by handling that belief of reversal, ultimately it will be seen that those mortal consciousness is nothing but false beliefs entertained, and that they can be handled through science. Science always is that which takes care of beliefs, and only science of ideas can heal a belief which is objectifying itself as a physical condition. It makes the healing process understandable in Christian Science, because some people would say to us, you mean you don't go to a doctor, you don't take pills, you don't believe in surgery as the ultimate method of practice? And we say no, and now we know why. Because they're beliefs that objectify themselves on the body and give pain. And as we've seen now, how can a surgeon's scalpel cut out a belief? And how can a drug heal a belief? Only ideas can resolve beliefs. That's why Christian Science heals. Because we deal with the science of ideas that replace these false beliefs. It becomes normal and natural to us why Christian Science heals, doesn't it? And we have an explanation. And it would, the ones who are working on mentality and see that mentality are filled with belief will make then very easily the next step into the divine system of reference of ideas resolving beliefs, you see. They'll understand what we're saying.
Dick. We have to be very careful to not believe we're healing the body, material body.
Yes.
Matter body.
Yes.
Because it too is at the standpoint of consciousness.
Yes.
Not material.
It's not material. No. The a matter body is just mentality objectified. Once we, our mentality, as we see, goes out from seeing the world as God sees the world, then what God sees is an identity which is ideational. Idea is the answer to matter and the belief of a matter body. That we are mind's idea. We're an ideational concept, aren't we? That's right. So that gradually is understood, and therefore the method of practice comes from taking the body to a physical doctor, and it's treating it as a machine. Then you see the world gradually would step towards more psychological help, and then finally into the spiritual help. But the Christ isn't taken away from anyone, because as she says, we seek truth righteously, and he directs the path, the way the Christ appears to us, and it's step-by-step evolution out in science, understanding, and practice, as she shows at the end of the chapter on Footsteps of Truth. So this is all a very gentle, we emerge gently into spirit. So today then, what they call a new age is not so much a new age, and where we get the practice on the mental realm. And this is where most of the people today are working out from, is the step one, the theory that all is mind or consciousness, and the practical consequences of this theory is that we have the mind research. All sorts of different accentuations in mind research today under a new age, but we know it's just old age revisited. Many of these things have been tried out throughout the times. Altered states of consciousness through perhaps altering drugs, through meditation, through biofeedback, body consciousness, through mind awareness of the body and the different organs of the body. That's a kind of a mind accentuation that especially the Eastern philosophy does through yoga and concentrating on different aspects of the body. Exobiology, linguistics, meditation research, metapsychiatry, neuroscience, or psychoneuroimmunology today it's called, in its larger term of the mind's control of the immune system, paraphysics, psychic research, thanatology, which is just the study of death and dying like Kubler-Ross does, transpersonal psychology, even into the Star Trek series where they show so much the accentuation of many of those series on mind and consciousness and the research that's going on. That's why that series, I think, is making such a great impact, because so much of what goes on there is has that mental accentuation. I know a friend that I was early in the 70s explaining what I was doing in science and in Christian Science, and they looked at me and said, well, I really can't quite understand what you're saying, but the only way I possibly could make contact with what you're saying is through what I see in Star Trek and what they're talking about there. So it has been a big phenomena that helped out with the understanding of the mental. Psychic research, we know the psychic or mind, or psychic, it can be soul. Exploring the psychic, all the various psychic phenomena, the non-physical phenomena, the mental phenomena, which it's with its research into extrasensory perception or ESP through telepathy and clairvoyance and clairaudience and precognition, retrocognition. In psychokinesis, where we have telekinesis and teleportation and materialization and dematerialization and levitation and psychic healing and psychic surgery and thoughtography and out-of-body projection and apparition of the living. These are things that, oh well, we could say even people like Shirley MacLaine and some of these people are advocating today in her books like Out on a Limb. These various people into psychic research. And then, of course, the spiritual phenomena, mediumships. Well, that's still going on with these different people going to mediums that are mediums for people called Rompha. There was a woman up in the Northwest that Shirley MacLaine came to, and other actors at one time. She was very, very popular for channeling ancient personality called Rompha, who would give them individual advice for their life in the times. And all these various spirit encounters, and then, of course, the spirit of possession, people that believe in reincarnation, all these various isms and ologies that are friends into getting into the mental begin to discuss, and of which we always want to show them that this is not a not spiritual happenings, but it's just mental. They want to tell us it's spiritual, don't they? They always want to say, well, levitation gives us, Jesus could levitate, so therefore it's a phenomenon of spiritual. All these things we know now that we have to be able through science to show them the point of intersection where they are. Now, in the mental, when they go to various classes out in the world on psycho-cybernetics, let's say, or classes on EST, or I think it's classes called Landmark, classes that are being offered today by the various businesses to help their people in work gain a healthy mental mentality. These are actively being done today. This all is mental. The mental can be good and evil. And then watch mentality. That they teach then that consciousness is the primary factor, and then there's the subconscious. And they say that therefore conscious is the objective and subconscious is the subjective, that conscious is the voluntary and the subconscious is involuntary, conscious is the rational, the subconscious is the irrational. They say that you want to think of the mental like the conscious being, the captain that gives the order, and that just that subconscious level below the conscious mental is that which takes and responds to the order, and that the conscious is the reasoning mind, it makes all the decisions, and that the subconscious mind accepts decisions, it does not reason things out, it does not argue, it does not prove if a decision is right or wrong, good or bad, true or false, yet it controls and governs all experiences. That the creative mind creates according to the order. So when it says to watch mentality, and you can see we're heading towards the second step, it begins to show therefore that we must watch our mentality at step one to see whether it is good. If we think good thoughts, we have a good experience. If we think bad thoughts, we have a bad experience. So if we say consciously, I can afford it, then the subconscious makes certain that that stays in our mentality, the sense that we can afford it, and it puts us into attitudes that eventually we can afford it, they say. Or if we keep saying, I can't afford this, then they say this the subconscious is going to make certain that we can't afford it, because it is a storehouse and keeps all those commands there. It's like a storehouse of memory of all the personal data that we've input to it. That's why Max has shown many times that the psychosomatic illnesses come from somebody who will say, well, you know, that makes me nervous, I can't deal with it, and so then they're nervous all the time. Or I can't back up to it, and they get back problems. I can't stomach it, and they get stomach problems. Or this makes me ill, and they get ill. You know that language, that organ language that we use? Well, this is what they show in their exercises today in these classes out there for people. They're at that step where they're saying, look, at the way you talk is taken by the subconscious mind, and it's not making a value judgment. It's just going to believe what you say. And so if you say you can't stomach it, then it knows you can't stomach it, you see. If it knows you can't back up to it, then it's going to make sure you don't back up to it, you see. And therefore, we can take on all these psychosomatic illnesses of back problems, of nerves, of stomach problems, and intestinal problems, just by the language and the way we talk. We're giving these commands constantly to the subconscious. And we know amongst ourselves, of course, as scientists, we hope we're getting better. But in others, you really know the others who talk organ language. And that some people even discuss what they did. They remember what they did before this operation and that operation. They say, oh yes, I went to Europe before I had the gallbladder operation, you know, or I visited China, and that was just right after I had to have something, you know, another operation. And then I went here after I had to have a little bit, you know, removed from the eyes. They were drooping a little bit. Well, I mean, it's just one experience after another according to the body and the body language. Well, this is naturally just going to have an effect, that it's just a body-oriented consciousness, and constantly giving it the commands from the conscious to the subconscious, which is not going to argue. It's just going to make sure that that happens. It's going to follow the order. So in order to remedy this in the world at this stage, they say that, and this, these are steps that are actively being done. I mean, I know, for example, having people told me just recently classes that they have gone to in their business that is to help them with having a healthy whole mentality, with seeing the accentuation that all is mental, that they tell them then in step one to set goals in categories and to affirm